I'm John Batchelor with Jerry Dunleavy and James Hassan. The new book is Cabal. The airfield is surrounded by people who are desperate to leave Afghanistan. At the same time, the airfield is surrounded by the Taliban, who are partners, so-called, by the State Department and the White House back in Washington. The Taliban has a very strong relationship with Al-Qaeda. It has an unclear relationship with ISIS, ISIS-K, called in the region. Why this matters now is because it's unsolved. We're going to go to Abbey Gate, and what happens the afternoon of August 26th. But it's important to prepare the ground here. And Jerry, I come to you. You are a principal and you are an investigator of this matter, and it's ongoing. We need to understand what we know so far about the Taliban, their relationship to ISIS-K, and especially the Haqqani network, which my understanding is a stand-in for the Al-Qaeda group now, today. But also, there's evidence that they worked with, when it suited them, ISIS-K. Who were the Haqqanis, and where were the Haqqanis during this evacuation, especially on the 26th of August? Where were they, Jerry?
It's a great question. So I am an investigator on the House Foreign Affairs Committee looking into the Afghanistan withdrawal. I'll just note that I'm just here as the author, the co-author of this book. But the relationship that the Haqqani network had with all these groups is very important. So the Haqqanis are a key force inside the Taliban. They also have a long-standing relationship with the Pakistani intelligence services, the ISI. On top of that, the Haqqanis have a very long relationship with Al-Qaeda as well. And Sirajuddin Haqqani, who's the head of the Haqqani network, who is the top Haqqani commander in 2021 and who is a top member of the Taliban government today, he has a very close relationship with Al-Qaeda and by some national security experts is considered to be essentially a member of Al-Qaeda as well. And but by the way, when we killed Ayman al-Zawahiri in 2022 in Kabul, the number two, he was the number two for Osama bin Laden. Zawahiri was hiding out in Sirajuddin Haqqani's safe house. So the relationship there is very strong. On top of that, the Haqqanis have had at the time a relationship with ISIS-K. So the Taliban, of course, the Taliban and ISIS-K are foes oftentimes. However, when it suited them, they would come together to carry out attacks against the U.S. military and the Afghan forces, especially in Kabul. Kabul attack networks that were set up by ISIS-K oftentimes would use facilitation and help from the Haqqani network to carry out those attacks, basically attacks that the Taliban might not want to take credit for or have anything to do with, but we're happy to help ISIS-K carry out. And on top of that, in 2021, and today, the head of ISIS-K, the leader of ISIS in Afghanistan, was himself a former commander in the Haqqani network who had longstanding relationships with top members of the current Taliban government. And so you have these relationships set up. And what's important to keep in mind is that at Kabul airport, the Taliban controlled pretty much all of Afghanistan at that point, including all of Kabul, and was providing quote-unquote security outside the airport. And it was the Haqqani Taliban specifically that had gained power in Kabul at the time and was in charge outside the airport. And so the Haqqani Taliban had set up what are called their Badri 313 units, which are their suicide units outside the airport. And one of the Haqqani commanders even commented that the first thing that he did when he showed up at the airport was surround it with 1,000 suicide bombers. So you combine that with the fact that the first thing that the Taliban did when they got to Bagram was free those ISIS-K prisoners, including the guy who would go on to carry out the suicide bombing. not exactly what you would want from your security partner at the airport.
James, it's August 26, 11:30 a.m. in the morning. My notes from your book. Very excellent reporting. A Mass-Cal event is warned. What is Mass-Cal? What are they talking about, James?
Mass-Cal is the military acronym for mass casualty. It's when you have, it's exactly what it sounds like. When you have a whole lot of severely wounded or, killed in action troops in a single event, in that, you need immediate response, right, and reinforcement from other units, such that basically the unit itself cannot take care of their own.
All right. Not only does the Mass-Cal warning go out to all the commands, the Marines, the airborne, all the attendant units, planes coming in and out, the mobs coming up close, they had a detailed identification of what to look for. A man with a shaved head dressed in black and a backpack with three arrows on it. Very detailed. And your reporting, and there's some ambiguity here, the reporting says that the Reaper 2 sniper team, their snipers are up high. They identified someone very, very close to that description, very close. We're looking at what's enraging here is we're looking at really good information. In other words, the CIA or somebody knew what they were talking about. What did you learn from this, James, reading it over now, all these years later?
Yeah. Let me circle back really quickly just to finish what you asked about the Mass-Cal, because I think this is really important. At 11 a.m., the intelligence was so specific and so reliable that at 11 a.m., before the attack occurred, about 5 hours later, about 6 hours later, the commanders at the airfield ordered the night shift of the medical units to return to duty and to be on standby so that they could treat wounded. That is how significant, serious, and concrete that threat of a suicide bombing was. To your second point about the description of the bomber himself, as Jerry mentioned, that Biden administration has never named him. They've never acknowledged him, even though it's confirmed with 100% certainty within the intelligence community that who he is. We actually include his picture in our book, Kabul. But the description that you're mentioning came from testimony from Sergeant Tyler Vargas Andrews, who was a Marine sniper stationed outside of Abbey Gate. But importantly, there were also two other independent interviews given by both Army and Marine service members during the Pentagon investigation that confirmed Sergeant Vargas Andrews' account and his description, which I think is very important, because Sergeant Vargas Andrews was never interviewed by the Pentagon for any of this. And he ended up sustaining a loss of two limbs. But as he testified to Congress and as backed up by transcribed interviews given to Pentagon investigators, he was given the Army Psychological Operations Team received a threat description, basically a be on the lookout description for a potential ISIS suicide bomber directly from CENTCOM, from Central Command. And the PSYOPs team, which is the PSYOPs are a member of U.S. Army Special Operations Command. They took that directly to the Marines in the sniper tower. They passed it along. And around 11 a.m. or around actually around that time, roughly, maybe a little after, the Marine team in the sniper tower, whose call sign was Reaper 2, identified a person who met this description exactly and was acting in the way that you would expect a suicide bomber to act, and that he was not trying to get to the gate. He was fidgety. He had a bag, all of that. And they called the report up to their battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel Brad Whitehead, and they asked for permission to engage. And he told them, I do not have that authority to give to you. And they said, yeah, respectfully, sir, who does? And he said, I don't know, but I'll get back to you. And there was never an answer about that. And they lost the bomber in the crowd. And a few hours later, carnage happened.
Jerry Dunleavy, James Hassan. The book is Cabal. August 26, 5:36 p.m. in the afternoon, 1736 if you're talking military. When we come back these years later, what do we need to know? What don't we know? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.